Instructional Designers in Offices Drinking Coffee is brought to you by Domino, makers of Domino One, the all-in-one cloud-based e-learning authoring tool for teams. You can learn more at domino.com. That's DOMINKNOW.com. Now, here's this week's episode.
It's another Wednesday morning. Welcome to Idiotic.
Yep. Well, as stated in the chat, it is hugely cold. Hugely cold. Can cold be a size? It just feels like it's a massive coldness here in Eastern Ontario.
It is. It can be hugely cold. Like sure. In the summertime here when it gets hugely hot.
Yes, I can imagine exactly the same thing, but in the obverse. So, yep.
Crazy. We might be having a little bit of technical difficulties here, everybody. So please bear with us, and we got it all figured out. It's it's one of those things that we love to deal with here.
Ed says stupid cold, and that's another good description for it. Yep, for sure.
It is indeed.
Yeah.
Morning, Ed.
Margie, let's see how the music, how things go without the music. Oh, there we go. Yeah. What we'll do, Margie, is if you don't mind, yeah, we'll get you to be on mute, and then hopefully it comes back because this was a problem we were having in the green room too. The mysterious muting of Margie. So,
yeah.
But let me circle back and complete the whole thought, folks. We have Margie Meacham with us here today. We're going to talk about the ever cool and powerful. Yeah, Jennifer's asking, need some AI? We need something here. AI for the weather. Oh, that might scare me. That could be a potential problem anyway. Margie, let's get you to come off mute. Brett and I will be quiet, and you can introduce yourself to our folks here.
I think it worked. Oh. Sorry, it looks like we're getting some feedback.
Yeah.
I think you might have two tabs open, whether you know it or not. It might be open twice. And I hate to say it, but might have to just shut down Chrome and I'll kick you out and re-invite you back in. I mean, if we're going to deal with this, we might as well deal with it right up front, right?
Okay, so you want me to close the browser.
Yeah, typically that echo comes from the double browsers. Mm. So.
Yeah. So Brett will kick you out and then just close all of your Chrome tabs up and then open just one fresh browser and log back in.
So. And I'll re-invite her.
Yeah. We'll see
how
that
goes. In
the meantime,
if anybody has any more weather updates or any questions about AI, heck, let's just get right to it and everybody can drop in their thoughts on AI. Do you use it? I mean, is it part of your daily life yet?
Yeah, that would be cool to know. I mean, we're, it's let's call it a relatively nascent thing, maybe in our own space. Although, we all use AI related tools every day, whether we're asking any number of those named products that you can ask questions of out loud, etc., that help us solve riddles in our lives, such as where is the coldest spot in the world right now? And the answer comes back, Ottawa.
It's definitely Ottawa. No, sure.
It might not be. I mean, what the heck? But it just feels like it. So,
yeah, I'll bet.
All right. Margie's back in. So, yeah, and don't forget, folks, as we go along here today, in addition to the chat, there's the question panel. So as we go along and Margie's going to.
Yeah.
There we go. There's Margie back.
It's not better.
That is much better.
All right.
Yeah, it's been a heck of a day here in the Crowdcast Factory, folks.
We're all good now. Let's get back to that introduction, Margie. Tell everybody who you are.
That's right.
Okay. Hi, everybody. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be back here. I love having coffee with everybody. And what we're going to talk about today is artificial intelligence and intel and development in in what we do, and what as instructional designers do we need to know about it? And of course, it's going to go really quick. I'm just going to give you a few highlights. A lot of you may already be working with it, and I want to save a little bit of time to show you what it might do for you. So I've got a little demo. Again, cool. Fingers crossed, all the technology stays working. So what I do is kind of on my slides also. So for maybe sure. We'll just jump to the slide presentation.
Yeah, for sure.
And we'll be watching for your
Let's
questions.
Put on the show for sure.
All right. Yep.
I don't even know if we want to get into it while we're here today, and maybe it's on your slides, but while you're getting that up, I'll just kind of preface this with, you know, do we want to talk about defining AI, or is that too much of a deep sort of
controversial issue? No, it's not too much of a stretch. Are you seeing my slides though?
Not yet, no.
All righty, let's do that again. Oh, now I should be sharing, right?
Yes, we see it.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll give you guys this stuff at the end. This is how to get in touch with me. And what I do is I work with neuroscience and artificial intelligence, really, for instructional design. And what is artificial intelligence? Well, it's not Commander Data from Star Trek, at least not yet. It's really think of it as automation, automating a lot of the things we'd like to do as trainers and as instructional designers, down to the level of individual responses so that everything is unique to that learner. That's what's really special about it for us. So artificial intelligence is really a program. It's a user interface would be another way to look at it that lets the learner communicate in a way that gives the illusion that they're really having a conversation. And that's what's so powerful about it, because to the brain, that feels like a social interaction. Even though we know that we're talking to a machine, the brain is still enjoying and learning from that exchange, particularly if it's well designed. And why this is so important for us all is because, and this is according to a new survey by Deloitte, but the pandemic, the lockdown forced us all to go more virtual, more digital platforms, and as such as our sponsors platform, for example, that's been huge growth in delivering learning in new ways, and we're not going back. So even at some point when we look at bringing people back to the office, it's starting to look more and more like a hybrid situation rather than straight all the time in the office. Businesses are looking for alternatives, and leaders want automation that allows them to be hyper personalized so that people only take the training they need. They have a learning system that remembers who they are, and they can have practice and other types of things that are unique to them, so that you make that learning experience unique to them. That's really what the power of AI is all about. And I learned about this as I was researching my book you see up there in the corner, AI and Talent Development from ATD Press. So what are some of the things? I'm curious, you guys are gonna have to tell me what shows up in the chat. Here are some of the things I found when I was researching for the book. I found customer service uses, of course, like a help desk, and a lot of training reinforcement and practice or onboarding, ways to help people in the field, performance support, maybe even this one, which is really interesting. Instead of a typical e-learning and some kind of authoring tool, having something like a chatbot deliver the information. You can have reminders and coaches and marketing, and there's all kinds of also unique standalone use cases. So has anybody actually experienced this or maybe even using one of these?
I've always thought a blend would be really, really interesting to look at, right? Like,
yeah.
like the e-learning alternative kind of sparks that thought that I wanted to be sure to bring up, and maybe this is a good point, but just wouldn't it be cool if that little chat bot, sort of the Q&A, could then point you to the proper training course or, you know, learning piece of content, you know, whatever it might be. Or maybe it's a collection of different types of content. It's like, you know, the chat bot is like, okay, I think I know what you're looking for now. You know, go to one of these, you know, learning bits.
Right. Yeah. It's because a lot of these large organizations have so much content and the learners are really kind of overwhelmed. You know, how do I find what's right for me? Well, as a matter of fact, that's exactly the demo I'm going to show you today. I'm going to show you an example of that, sort of the bot being a learning consultant. So Brent just used a term chatbot, and that's that simulated conversation. That's not the only way to use artificial intelligence, but it's probably one of the simplest. And so you've all used them. But probably not so much in your learning experience as in shopping online or getting help on some kind of application. In fact, you might have not even realized you were talking to a machine. You might have thought there was a person on the other end. Sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't. So the great thing about these chatbot programs is, first of all, the engagement and the personalization, but it's also the data on the back end. It captures that learner behavior, and you get a lot of insights into what questions they're asking, what they're struggling with. Like in Brent's example, what courses are they interested in? And what keywords are they using when they say, I'm looking for this kind of learning experience? So I think maybe it is time to go to my demo. And again, we're all sort of hoping that's going to work. This is... something I worked with the United Nations on, and they're just launching it. I'm pretty proud of it. So let's just show you what it looks like.
Well, I think too, the last time that we had you on, I think it's been a little while, but I think you were just getting started on this project or in the process of working
on it.
And we were looking forward to seeing how it plays out. So this is great.
And I did have it queued up, but I had to close all those windows. So bear with me.
No,
I'm pulling it up. Okay, so This is actually their test environment. So the idea here is it would sit on your learning management system or a SharePoint page or something behind your firewall. Didn't have to, but you notice they still have the traditional search here. But here is the employees named him Blue. I recommended that they have a little contest and see what they want to call him. And since Blue is sort of their logo color, that's laying ups. One employee drew this cute little figure here. You can see over here in the right. And I am now back to say hello. And here's what this is built to do. If I type something that Blue doesn't want to respond to, it says, do you want me to refer you to a human or, you know, can you ask something else? So in this case, I'm going to say return to the menu because that's going to get us to the start of the conversation. Because I was in here talking to him earlier.
Hello didn't make any sense since you've already engaged, right?
Oh. Well, that's annoying. Okay.
It's always a risk doing things
browser,
live.
I've got it all hung up, and I apologize for that.
Yeah, so, it's always a risk, right?
Yeah,
it even happens to the best of them, right? Didn't Steve Jobs have snafus when he was giving demos too? So it's all good.
I think I might be able to just go back this way. Here's the beginning.
Okay.
So it goes all the way back. You see me, the reason I'm going backwards, this is the interview. These are the questions it's going to ask me. Hmm. and Hugo is our pretend person. So we just came on, and Blue does remember who you are because it's connected to the employee database. It says, here are the things I can do. What would you like me to do for you? So let's see if we can do our self-assessment. And that's what's going to create a profile and help them find the right courses for them. Well, and Blue does not want to help me today. This is so embarrassing.
That's all right. It looks like if you can connect to APIs and stuff like that, right? Like if Blue knows who you are, I'm assuming that Blue could also grab other elements out of like the HCM, I guess, the human capital management system or whatever we call it these days, and figure out, you know, what department you work for and all the way down to some levels of job code. So it could say, you know, hi, Brent, I noticed that, you work for Domino and, you know, you're going to be doing a training here pretty soon on the platform.
Say, I see that you lead a team. We've got a new course on how to motivate your team in a virtual setting, for example.
There you go.
So it can be that targeted if we want it to be. So I'm going to walk through what I tested right before, because that'll show you the conversation. You're just not going to see it pop up in real time.
Okay.
Very cool.
So it's saying, hey, do you want to do your self-assessment? That's really important. Now notice just a second. This is an important part of the programming because of the reaction that users get if the answers come up too quickly. You want to program in just a couple of seconds, because in a real conversation, people do that. So you actually want to show them, let the learner see the bot thinking. Not too long. All right. Help me understand your role at the UN. And just what you were talking about, Brent. Pick your role here. And I said UN Women. Do you lead a team? I said yes. We love this option. Maybe someday. That indicates an aspiration. That's somebody who's thinking about moving into another role. And we guide them differently than someone who just says, no, that's not my job. I'm not interested. So which of the following challenges you the most? And I picked delegating tasks and having effective meetings. Do you feel you should strengthen your leadership skills? I said, yes. Are you part of a team? Yes. And I could have answered no. I would have branched out, just like designing a branching scenario in e-learning, more traditional e-learning. I could have branched out. Think also this could be a salesperson practicing their sales pitch and the customers, the bot, responding. So there's a lot of, or it could be a leader practicing how they're going to deliver a difficult message. So there's a lot of different ways you could craft these conversations. So now they pick what's most important to them. And now I'm in the interview. Are you involved in hiring? These are the important things we need to know in order to recommend courses. Do you manage projects? How confident are you with your project management?
That's an interesting one. I was thinking earlier, you know, probably at some point, not only are you trying to identify, you know, where someone sits within a certain pattern, but you also want to understand what they feel their sense of need is.
Right.
You know, not just that, oh, you're a leader, therefore you should take leadership courses.
But exactly. Instead of one size fits all, this is much more tailored. And in fact, they broke up their courses into a much shorter modular offering, so you didn't have to take like 2 hours of leadership training. You might just take 30 minutes on having effective meetings, if that's what this interview reveals is the most important to you. And we have an offering for innovation, so they ask about that. And they also get a report on all these responses because they're interested. How many of your employees think that they are innovative? How many don't? Do you make decisions? All of these are tied to different course recommendations, potentially, depending on how I answer. Do you manage physical assets? Takes me down a different path. Or contracts? I said no to all that. All right, so thank you. Now this is more of a personal interest. And that kind of goes with what you were saying, Chris. And remember, again, just an example, we've got interest from what they do in their role, but that's not enough. We want to know their aspirations. What do they like to do? It might not be the job they're in now. So do you like creating something new? Are you inspired by helping others? Are you interested in understanding yourself and other people? I'd be crazy if I said no, but somebody might. Enjoy working with numbers? I said no. That's honestly true. I don't. Enjoy managing multiple tasks and projects? Yes. Now, here is the big thing, and I don't know if this is going to come up. This takes a little while. What Blue does is matches all your responses and comes up with a PDF you can download that tells you where your priorities are. And then you get a learning plan. So let's see if it came up. You guys can still see this, right?
Yep, for sure.
All right, so these are courses, and the more numbers that sort of like points that I got from the conversation. So they're saying the most important thing for me to take is this course, and close behind it are these first few. Further down, there's some other recommendations that maybe I get to eventually. And then what I can do with that is I can print it. And I can, Blue also offers, would you like me to share this with your manager? And would you like to get started? I can sign you up for this course right now. Get me started on that top priority. So those are the kinds of things it does. And then it says, what else can I do for you? So for example, I might tell it to block study time. Now it's not integrated with my calendar, but for employees and volunteers who are on the system, that would work. So if I say that's it for now, and again, it's not active. So I said, that's it for now. And then Blue administers a little survey. Did I address your needs? Was the experience enjoyable? And would you recommend me to your colleagues? And then it says again, is there anything else you want to tell me? And thank you. I look forward to next visit. The next time I come, it will say, hi, Margie, the last time we did your learning assessment, do you need to update it? And then it would go from there. And what else would you like to do today? So that's pretty much how it works. We kept it pretty simple. It's in pilot right now, but so far so good, other than apparently me. Now I can stop sharing. I just found the button. There we go.
Brilliant.
So that gives you an idea. It's too bad it didn't work. You didn't get to see the little bullets come up. But having
the recap and you walking us through all of that, we can definitely see
the
process for sure. Yeah, yeah. That's handy, actually, that it was able to go backwards in time. Pushing the rewind button.
Kim is actually thinking about doing that. Doing that herself. So we might want to hear a little more about that. This is still pretty new. I mean, the technology's been around for years. This is just a new way to use it. For some reason, L&D has not picked up on this as quickly as, you know, just regular businesses. I mean, even my dry cleaner has a chatbot. very interesting. So I'm really interested in how that works. And those of you who know me, and I see some familiar names over here, know that I'm really interested in neuroscience. That's what got me into this, actually, because neural networks are the same, whether they are built in silicon or carbon, you know, human or animals for that matter. And actually, the two disciplines have been converging for the last few years. So you find a lot of neuroscientists working on making chatbots better. And you find a lot of artificial intelligence folks studying the human brain. So they're really partner sciences right now. I know a few scientists have gone back for a second PhD in the other discipline so they can, you know, understand brain in a broader sense. A brain could be artificial or biological. And we're trying to get those artificial ones to work in similar ways. And you've got to be really careful when you talk about this stuff, because as you can see, that bot is pretty simple and you can mess it up pretty quickly. Like when I said hello and it said, I don't know how to answer that. Now, that tells me I should probably go back and put in, hello, how are you? So that's what testing's for.
Yeah, for sure. That sounds like an unexpected circumstance, but you'll be able to modify that now.
Yeah,
to get back
we did put in some things like when people just keep saying, no, I don't want that. And they keep declining all the offers for blue. And said, well, I could tell you the weather. Are you interested in the weather? Mm-hmm. And then it goes into a little script that says, where are you? And it would pull up your forecast for the day. Or would you like history of the UN? Let me tell you what happened in our history today. So we put in a few fun conversational things just in case people tried to break it so they would have something to do with it.
like all those tests when people ask whatever their vocal bot is, those ridiculous questions, and then record the answers. I'm not prepared to answer that today, or those kinds of you mentioned the just a second kind of bit, mm-hmm. and I'm also thinking too, just about tone of voice from that character.
We spent a long time talking about what is the UN tone. Versus, it would be very different in a different company. It had to be pretty formal. And they have people for whom English is not their first language. Mm-hmm. So no slang or metaphors, they have to be very careful about that kind of thing. And that's for any kind of training design, not just a chatbot. You should talk about those things. So
it's got to be kind of a fine line to walk, though, because you have the formality of the culture, I guess, but it's also got to be, a warm sort of friendly voice in order to be perceived as something that you actually want to, interact with.
Right. And the key word is conversation. I mean, we really want to create a conversation experience, because that goes down a different path in your brain than reading, which is usually written very formally. So we don't want this to just be like a guided reading activity. It really needs to feel like a back and forth. And so it shouldn't always have complete sentences. Sometimes it should just say, okay, or just a moment. Or what do you think? It should ask questions. It should respond to questions. And the more you can do that, the better the experience is. And I see Kim was explaining that she actually was in an online discussion forum. And it was led by the chatbot, Kim. Is that what you're saying? That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, that would be kind of fun to see how an AI could actually lead a conversation like that instead of being on the responsive side of
it. There's an interesting study that I just saw where they put two chatbots talking to each other to see what one was programmed to ask questions about the subject and the other was programmed to answer as a test sort of to see how users might respond. That's great. See, that's a perfect example. And buddy,
the forum features,
yours is a good example too. A matter of fact, a lot of us have FAQ documents, frequently asked questions. And by the way, nobody reads those. Marketing always wants us to make FAQs, on the new product or, and it's a horrible way to find information because your question might be number 30 on that list or not there at all. But it's great foundation for a chatbot. Now you've got the questions and the answers. You can program that in and then you use keywords because people aren't going to type the question exactly like you have it. So then you say, if it has this string of keywords, this is the answer. And then you always ask, did that help? Is that what you wanted? So if people say no, the chatbot goes back through and says, okay, let's try again.
Yeah. There are two questions in the question panel. And I'll start with Kim's because she's asking about the project that you were just showing us. How long did it take to create the bot that you were showing us? And, how many people worked on it with you? Give us a sense of... what do you got to do to get this?
This is probably atypical because I'll tell you guys how this happened. I did that book, AI and Talent Development, Yeah, I mean, that took me a year and a half, and it was a neat experience. Very honored that ATD asked me to do that. My first book I did myself. I wrote it in a month. I had it published in a couple of days. A totally different experience. But I'm, you know, I'm just sitting in my office, and I get this call about a week after the book came out, and it's from Hugo, the name you saw in the bot, and he runs the training department for the United Nations. And I didn't have my phone number in the book. He, you know, went on LinkedIn, he searched around, he found me, and he said, "Well, I love your book. Can you do that for me?" And I said, "Sure."
Of course, the answer is always yes.
And so we started talking, and I full disclosure, I did not do all the programming. I got a team together. I tend to do the scripting, all that branching, all the questions, all the language. So if you want to count all the meetings and all the tests and all the reviews, it's taken us almost a year to get to this point. Mm-hmm. But the truth of it is the programming part is the shortest part. It's the design. It's the vision of the conversation and narrowing down what it's going to do so that, you know, he had lots of great ideas, but we focused on just one little thing it could do. Because you really have to build a separate program for each thing, because they're not really that smart. We're creating the illusion that they're smart. So we have
to. It's kind of the same thing in instructional, basic instructional design, right? Like we always, you know, want to jump into the tools right away, but the real hard part in the work should be in the analysis and the design and just making sure we get the actual design correct before we go into building. And I think we've all experienced trying to put the cart before the horse and having it, you know, become extremely difficult and end up taking a lot longer than it needs to, at least that development phase. I think you work out a lot of the bugs and you get a lot of the questions out of the way early on when you're doing, you know, pencil to paper or, you know, just doing that brainstorming stuff outside of the final tool first. And then jumping in, right? And then start doing
I did another example that's completely different to give you an idea of how, if you really control it from start to finish, how long it might take. For my local school, I had a teacher who's really passionate about the honeybees. And I don't know if you guys know, but they're very endangered. They're not on the list yet, but they're dying in huge numbers. Nobody knows why, but probably has a lot to do with the toxins in the world. So this teacher had built this wonderful program, but it was boring the kids to death. And I just ran, you know, I knew her personally. And I said, you know what, I might be able to help you. And I built this bot for her that is a queen bee. So when the kids log on, a little animation comes up, she flies around, and then she's very haughty queen says, "You are in the presence of royalty. What do you wish to know?" And then the kids ask questions. And so we put a bunch of keywords in it. And it was basically an FAQ about bees. And so, you know, if the kids typed in drones, it would say, "Oh, yes, those are my, you know, my workers. And here's what they do. Would you like to see a picture?" And there's a link and they could go see a picture or a video. So we had links to different assets. And that's another thing a bot can do is link, a lot like this conversation here where people are sharing links, except it would be the bot. It, as a matter of fact, buddy, it does go back to Clippy. We weren't as a group. Most people thought he was weird and annoying. I actually thought it was cool, but I was sorry to see Clippy go. But that is exactly right. So the ability to do it has been around for a long, long time. It's just kind of taken we humans a while to see the use cases and get comfortable with it.
Clippy feels like an example of where the user interface itself was actually the problem rather than the ability for Clippy to help you, et cetera.
It could have been. And I think I should have let you turn off the animation. Yeah. You know, you want to see that once or twice, you know, how he like fell apart and then put himself back together again. But you don't want to watch that all the time. So
yeah, or even just get rid of the idea of Clippy as a paperclip.
Something I forgot to mention is there is a button to shut Blue up. You know, you always want to have a close button. No, I know exactly what I'm doing. I'm going right to my course. I don't need to talk to you today.
I think that's what the user design teams figured out from Clippy, was always give the user the ability to turn on or off whatever it is that you've created for them.
Yeah, like the audio, you know, there's a lot of people work in environments where they can't play the audio. You know, that's a great example. Yeah.
Options are the key for every bit of what we do, right? I mean, you got to give your users options. Locking them into one thing is often what leads to frustration.
Another question that that Craig had tossed into the question panel was, how much AI do we think is in our daily lives already?
A lot more than we think, unless you are highly educated about it. For example, your banking, a lot of banks and financial management companies are making recommendations through machine learning. There's a program that's analyzing markets and doing a better job, by the way. This is a great tool, better job than a human might. And of course, there are always humans, there should always be humans paying attention and monitoring and tweaking those recommendations. But a lot of the grunt work is being done through automation. Agriculture has become heavily automated. Big industrial size farms are tracking their farm equipment like a tractor and identifying a breakdown before it happens. And this is combined with the Internet of Things. So the tractor has analytics running, that's artificial intelligence. And then it says to some console, hey, I need service. You know, my oil's getting low, or I don't know what issues tractors have. And that's artificial intelligence. So it's happening. As if you read news online, a large number of those articles were written by algorithms. And they've gotten so good, it's very hard to tell the difference. So that's an interesting guess, Craig. It really depends on your life and how digital it is. But the more digital your life is, the more likely you're encountering artificial intelligence all over the place on a daily basis.
And Craig is very smart, queuing me up on the poll. So I dropped a poll in very quickly. So if anybody wants to answer that poll or just take a guess, it might be kind of fun to see.
Can I see the poll too? If I hit poll?
Yeah, you should be able to.
For sure.
Yeah.
I see. We have it right there. Okay. We're not at 100 yet, but I would say, between 25 and 50. I think maybe more like 30 is probably a good guess. That sounds good to me. But see, now I'm influenced by Craig.
Well, let's see what other
you can do. You can actually use the chatbot to sort of influence thinking by asking open-ended questions that are meant to make people reflect. For example, it's very hard to move the needle on diversity and inclusion and getting at unconscious bias the traditional training way of, hey, stop doing that. This is bad. Stop doing it. Even people who want to change, that's very hard. Behavior change from a little coach that comes up now and then says, how is it going? Have you thought about this? Matter of fact, a whole bunch of apps you can get to lose weight are using artificial intelligence. And essentially, they're a chatbot. They're giving you suggestions, they're recommending, you know, food to eat and exercise. And they're saying, oh, you haven't logged any exercise today. You know, you might want to get moving. And those kind of things are all run by, we tend to use them interchangeably, artificial intelligence, algorithm, and machine learning and automation. And to some, at a layman's level, like we're talking, that's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
But those are actually parts of, I mean, they're all connected. They all work together, but they do different things. So when you're working with an algorithm, that's behind the scenes. That's what makes the chatbot work. And the automation is that experience, you know, it's on all the time. It's working all the time. Once you build it, you know, you just sit back and collect the data and analyze it. And then your analysis usually tells you to tweak it here or there. Now, I know we're out of time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I like to think of it as looking at, the data and the analytics in the background, but not the decision making. Leave the decision making up to us. Let it present options based on the data. Let it do a lot of
identifying trends,
chunking, but let us make the final decisions. Yeah. As soon as it's making the final decisions, that's when I get a little nervous.
Well, and there have been some really well-publicized cases where people were a bit enthusiastic and started doing this, like reviewing loan applications, and all of a sudden, a lot of bias came in. You know, these are like our children, too. They do what we teach them to do. So, and human beings have a lot of flaws. So the people who were building what they thought would be this wonderful, objective way to approve people for loans, they had a bias of thinking that certain neighborhoods had lower income, less reliable borrowers. Well, what did that translate into? A bot that was a racist.
That's not good.
Yeah. No. So, and to their credit, they took it down right away. They saw within days. Yeah. Oh my God.
Hey, Margie, drop your email and your website into the chat and all that good stuff as we wrap it up. Thanks, everybody. Chris?
Yeah, thanks everybody for joining us today. Awesome, as always, chat, conversations, awesome ideas going back and forth in the chat. If you haven't already, hit that poll. We have a LinkedIn group where we can get together and chat a little bit more about this. I don't know, Brent, are you on that?
No, I'm not on that.
I will. No worries, I will drop that in.
Yeah, and that second one was my Twitter handle, in case you guys want to
On Twitter. Well, thanks everybody. We'll catch you guys all again next time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, everybody.
Adios, everybody.